Hello, and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, here with you every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM or at your convenience on voiceofvashon.org. Today, I'm thinking we're all still pinching ourselves, if we're Democrats, or pinching others, if we're Republicans, in reaction to the results of our country's presidential election this weekend. I, for one, am trying to shake off the cautious part of my optimism so I can revel in the joy of a new direction for our country. But it's just not that simple, is it? To help us sort out our feelings about the grueling months-long process of this election and its attendant threats to the very foundation of our nation, I've invited comic, TED speaker, and mental health awareness advocate Bill Burnett to join me on Real Talk today. Hey, welcome, Bill.
Welcome, Susan. Welcome. I'm glad to be here. And I have good news and bad news.
Oh?
The good news is I'm glad to be here. The bad news is I really don't talk politics. Like, my mission is about depression and anxiety. And I don't really agree with a lot of people, but I don't think that's important for me to hash out with them, because we all have an experience of life that can be difficult in the exact same way. So to me, I look for similarities across the spectrum instead of those differences. So I'm not a great guest for a political analysis show, I'm afraid. So I don't know if you want to shift topics or how you want to handle it.
Actually, I don't want to talk politics. What I want to talk is the anxiety and the depression that we all have been experiencing, whether Republican, Democrat, or otherwise, the tension in the air in the country that I think, and maybe that's where you can help us, have been causing folks a lot of anxiety and possibly depression. What sort of sense do you have of the general mood?
Well, there's a lot of factors right now, and it's been a rough year for a lot of people, is my sense of it. You have a pandemic. You have a lot of political uncertainty. You have a lot of economic uncertainty and a lot of immediate economic hardship that's facing people, you know, as well as sort of an awakening around the fact that, or not an awakening, but a recognition of the fact that structural racism has existed for a long time, and it's no longer something people can just deny or ignore. So there's like so many things happening at once, and a lot of them are creating positive change. But I see so much the uncertainty, especially economic uncertainty, is really impacting a lot of people. So I know a lot of people who are dealing with unusual spikes in depression and anxiety this year. It's really been a rough year.
It has been. And well, in your experience, maybe you can give folks a bit of your backstory before you share with us the wisdom you've gained from your experience. What is it that got you into the notion of mental health awareness and dealing with depression and anxiety?
Well, for me, it was a survival skill. So I was an addict for a lot of years. And before that, I was bipolar. And then I was like bipolar and an addict, as they call it, comorbidity, which is really a depressing way to phrase it. They could cheer that term up a little bit. But I have dealt with a lot of depression. You know, I've been suicidal. I've had suicide attempts. I've had a drug overdose. So I've nearly died a few times. And so for me, like, there did come a point where I realized that, or I don't know if I realized, but I guess I realized there was nobody was coming for me. No miracle was going to happen. And that if I wanted to not live in such horrible depression, I was going to have to try to find my way out of it, which I didn't even know if that was possible. I just sort of hit a wall. And I remember standing outside of my apartment in Green Lake at the time, in this backyard at night, and smoking a cigarette and thinking, well, you know, right, wrong, good or bad, whether it's your fault, not your fault, none of that really matters. Like, this is your situation. What are you going to do about it? So that was my sort of beginning of my transformation. And I decided to try several things to learn to live in less depression. And I actually had a couple years clean at that time. It turned out quitting drugs was important because it, like, you know, gives you the ability to turn gears, but it doesn't cure depression instantly. It just alleviates the extra pain you're causing and all that. So for me, it was a survival skill, and I tried a lot of things. Not all of them worked, but a number of them did. And I was able to shift my experience of life really entirely in a lot of significant ways, which I'll enumerate quickly, and then I'll throw the floor back to you to see where you want to go with the discussion. So I had severe social anxiety, and I learned, I was afraid to order pizza because I didn't want to deal with the person for, you know, 30 seconds to hand them money and be like, oh, have a good one. It was very nerve wracking, that much. So going to the store was very stressful. Just being around people was extremely stressful, and it had gotten worse, but it had always been bad. So I had to go and learn how to not only be around people, but how to interact with them and how to socialize and how to make friends. And it was a whole process. I was very overweight at the time, so I wanted to learn how to lose weight. Thought that would be helpful, and I wanted to live with less depression as well. So I did a lot of things around trying to say, "Hey, what can I do to deal with depression? How can I find, like, it? Maybe not like be happy all the time, but like learn to live a lot better." And then I wanted to, of course, stay clean. 2 years isn't a lot. I have 12 now, so I guess that puts this time at 10 years ago. That's all right. Those are the changes I made. And for me, it was a survival skill, and advocacy, kind of awareness advocacy, grew out of wanting to feel less alone, really, by sharing my story and people coming up to me and saying, oh, yeah, I can relate to that, or thank you. It reminds me, like, I'm helping other people realize that they're not alone and that there is hope. But really, at the end of the day, you know, I'm reminding myself too.
Yeah, there's an old saying, we teach what we need to learn. And it sounds like you've really taken advantage of that opportunity. As you've gone through this, this mental health awareness, I don't know if it's a project or lifestyle that you've chosen, How much has it affected your attitude toward others, and how often do you see folks who might appear to be tough allowing themselves to be vulnerable in your presence?
Well, I see people vulnerable in my presence a lot because people open up to me, and I think it's because I'm vulnerable, but somehow people feel really okay opening up to me a lot. So one-on-one, I see people willing to be very vulnerable. Is that your question, sort of?
Well, the question that comes to my mind often is that our culture is not one that allows or supports vulnerability. And so I wonder how much you have learned about the impact of our supposed stoicism, you know, the it's all good.
And yeah.
How much does that contribute to general anxiety and depression among folks?
Well, I believe it contributes significantly, because people are not only experiencing depression and anxiety, but they're wanting to hide it. So now they have the extra pressure of trying to hide it, which can be which can be very hard in itself. It can be very exhausting. And then stress over worrying that they're not hiding it well or being found out. And so, and it's this whole... It's, I believe, like one area of society where we have really low-hanging fruit, as we like to say in the world of information technology and probably the world generally, an easy way to improve life a little bit for a lot of people, right? It is to allow people to talk about how they're doing and to be open and honest about how they're doing and to not have to hide depression and anxiety. Because depending on the stats you look at, in any given year, this is from the WHO in 2001, in any given year, over 1 in 4 people will have a mental health condition. But then you look at the CDC and they had said, well, 50% of Americans, over 50% will have a mental health condition in their lifetime. But then you go further to more recent studies globally, and they're looking at symptoms, not actual diagnoses. And we see like 80 to 90% in a lifetime of a person. And then you go to the pandemic right now, and we're seeing rates tripling. And these are more snap polls than they are formal research surveys and whatever it takes to become a stat, because that would take more time. But what we're seeing is a huge increase, whatever the amount. So the number of people who are running around all carrying the weight of pretending not to have anxiety and depression, when in fact it actually makes them more normal than not having it. And it's an easy, powerful way to connect. So to me, this is like one just really huge area where we can improve life for a lot of people a little bit. And I say a little bit because we're offering them human connection. We're not offering them a cure. We're not going to, ease the discontent that has resided in the heart of mankind since the dawn of time. Like, life is hard. Life is hard for a lot of people. And it's asking too much of any sort of mental health professional to deal with that basic existential crisis that I think ultimately is at the heart of a lot of this. But to get less woo-woo, I think we can just say people would feel a lot better if they knew that other people lived with it and that it was okay. And then it's something that's so important in people's lives. If you're dealing with severe depression or severe anxiety, it's taking up a lot of your thought, a lot of your energy. And to be able to connect with other people about that would be helpful instead of isolating, right? What do you need if you're depressed or anxious? Connection. And what do you get? You get isolation because you're hiding it and you're afraid of the stigma.
So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and it increases exponentially. What sort of ideas or techniques have you discovered during the pandemic? Because here now we are all more isolated from one another, I believe you mentioned is exacerbating depression and anxiety. You got any thoughts, any techniques for how people can connect under the circumstances?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of things people can do. I think the everybody's life is different. So who they have in their life, what social resources they have available to them will vary person to person. So maybe I'll give you some examples of things I'm doing now, but then we can broaden the discussion because not everybody has exactly my life. So they're going to look for different ways. So things I do are I will schedule things with people. I have creative projects. So I work with people like, oh, we'll meet once in a week and work on this writing project, or, hey, let's work on this thing. I will call old friends. I'll just sometimes, just chat with them while I'm walking or driving. We'll make time for that sort of thing. I'll plan gaming activities, like some of my brothers and I, we're all in different cities, we'll play computer games online together. And I know that gaming is a whole different thing for younger generation. They're like, no, too much gaming. But it is social, right? It is a way to connect with people while you're isolated. It has that going for it. I will sometimes attend meetups. I haven't been doing that, but I do start meetups, you can also, you can start your own communities. Like, oh, I'm interested in this. I'll just put a meetup up, or I'll do this thing and I'll get people to join and we'll have a little bit of connection. And maybe it happens one time, maybe it happens recurring. I've even like scared up some sort of get-togethers with some old friends from, you know, whatever. We all used to do this thing together. Hey, let's get together and have a, you know, just have like a whatever, a, you know, a hangout time on the Zoom. So I do things like that. But for somebody who doesn't have a big social circle, you know, definitely I would say leverage the social circle that you do have. And, you know, the easiest way to deal with anxiety and depression is to just connect, and you don't even have to talk about your anxiety and depression. Like, just get that human connection. And it doesn't always have to be like, and this is going on with me, that's going on with me. If it feels natural, that might come up later, but just find a reason to connect with people you have or family. And if you really don't have much at all in the way of opportunities to connect, then you can create them. There are a lot of ways to connect with people online. I think of meetup.com, but that's just one little avenue. There are a lot of people who do it a lot of different ways. And, you know, you probably get some, you know, younger generation people in here and say, okay, what can I do with, what can I do on Discord? How am I going to do this here? You know, what are different options for creating communities and getting people together? But you can join communities and create communities. And there's a lot. And I would suggest finding ones with events where you can talk mm-hmm. to people.
Yeah, that's a lot of technology, and you could probably run a seminar on that alone. Two questions come to mind when I hear you talking. One is, you talk about using humor to manage depression and anxiety. How have you done that? How have you used humor?
Well, I've literally done a comedy show about depression and anxiety, and I do when I do talks or different events. Even I give a training with a partner. We do a training on how to talk to coworkers about depression and anxiety for businesses, and even that will bring humor in, because to me, we want to make it easy for people to talk about depression and anxiety. So there's really two things there. One is I just find life absurd, and there is humor even in the darkness. Yes, this is going on, and yes, it's not pleasant, but you know, you start to look at the way the human mind works and how sometimes, and just so many different aspects. To me, there is beauty in life, even in the darkness. You know, maybe not at the moment where you're experiencing sharp depressive pain, but sometimes even then, but certainly when you're just a little bit removed from it, you're like, oh, that was ridiculous. Like, it was so to me, it is humorous. So the humor comes out naturally, but a lot of people maybe don't feel free to be light about it, because they're not shown how to do that, and they're taught that you're supposed to be heavy about it. So I think that's part of my mission too, is like, we want to change the dialogue, and we want to reduce stigma and make these things easier to talk about. Well, by talking about them casually and easily, we say almost more than we can with words.
Yeah, very good. I've read and heard folks who discuss the notion of depression and anxiety, and that it can be helped with what can be called conscious living. Like, you mentioned the beauty of the world, making oneself aware of the beauty in a given moment might help to take away that rumination of fear, depression, and anxiety. What would you have to say about that?
Well, how woo-woo do you want me to get?
Oh, go woo-woo. Woo-woo is good.
Okay, that I can do. So for me, when I set out to tackle depression, one of the things I did was I started meditating more regularly, badly, but consistently, is this how I think of it. And And I started reading a lot of books. So Eckhart Tolle, Buddhist texts, like the Dhammapada, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, some more obscure stuff, a lot of Sanskrit. In fact, I got four of my brothers now. No, three of them join me every Sunday morning for scripture. We'll go through esoteric Eastern scriptures. We laugh a lot. They're pretty funny.
How many brothers do you have?
I have five. So
wow.
I'm, so far,
is that a Catholic family?
Yes, it actually was. Not as much anymore.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And so so you talk about finding beauty in the moment. Yeah, there's so many ways to interpret that. But certainly that anything that gets you out of your own story, your own obsession with the past, poor choices, good choices, things that went your way, things that didn't you go, you know, whatever, regrets, victories, like anything that gets you out of the future, which is, you know, what's going to happen, this bad thing, oh, this good thing, oh, but I have, you know, that's really, anxiety is generally future-based. And anything that gets you away from your personal story as to, you know, I'm an individual who, versus sort of like I'm, some sort of, there's an eternal energy behind, there's something permanent, whether, and this would get too woo-woo probably for now, but there is a more permanent way to, there is an awareness that has, in which the world and us and all of our experiences and perceptions and actions occur, right? And there is some sort of consciousness or awareness in which all that is happening, and that is timeless, I would suggest. I mean, I don't really want to argue about it, but that's the way I perceive it. And so really, you're this sort of timeless presence out of which all of this, you know, chaos comes, and into which it will ultimately return. So to me, when you say stop and just experience the beauty of the present moment, I think the more you can get out of, I'm this limited being in with a very specific story that's sad or happy or both, and this is all I am, if you can take yourself out of that, and looking at the beauty in a moment can totally take you out of that.
What about reaching out to others? There are other folks who say the best way to make yourself feel better is to do something for somebody else. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I think it helps a lot. I think that it feels good to contribute to people, and I often struggle with what would be the best way to do that. I have done a lot of volunteering in the past few years around depression and anxiety, and helping people tell their stories or helping organizations raise funds and doing coaching for people and that sort of thing. Before that, I've done other kinds of volunteering. I don't feel like I do enough. I always worry that I'm like not doing enough for other people. So it creates stress at the same time. It's like, it feels good to help, feels good to help them, but then I'm like, I should do more.
Spoken like a true recovering Catholic. You are listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I'm talking with Bill Burnett, who is an expert in mental health awareness. And here at a time when we're all experiencing a great deal of stress, I invited Bill to help us think about how to manage the depression and anxiety that come with that, that are just kind of normal byproducts of the time we're living in. So, Bill, what should we be looking for in our loved ones, particularly if we're concerned about suicide? You were here on Vashon Island for a panel discussion about suicide prevention. And I'm wondering, in the last 2 minutes that we have, if you could give folks some idea of what to watch for in their loved ones for either suicide ideation or just plain misery.
Well, I think that you can, you know, if it's a friend or a family member, you'll kind of know that they're out of sorts. And if you're wondering if they're maybe having suicidal thoughts, you know, you can ask them and take the mystery out of it, because there's really no accurate way to read signals. I mean, there are signs that you can look for: changes in behavior, changes in sleep pattern, changes in eating pattern, changes in interest or joy taken in daily activities. But that's more for therapists. I mean, I would say go with your gut. If you think somebody's struggling, you can spend some time with them, and you don't always have to like get to the heart of what's going on with them. If you do suspect they're like literally suicidal, then yeah, you should ask them, because it will never put the idea in their head. The stats show, studies show, that it will get them to talk to you or not, but it won't cause anything bad to happen by you having said that. So it's always okay to ask and discuss it. And but just hang out with people, try to create that connection, and don't make too big of a deal out of it unless they open up to you and want you to. Like, just be there for them as a, you know, as a connecting presence.
Yeah, and that brings me to one last question, and that is, gosh, there's so much we could talk about, but that is, how do you get people to believe that you really want to know how they are when you say, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. How do you get people to give a real answer to that? Besides,
that's an interesting question. Yeah, I do see. I don't have a good one. I know some people are like, ask twice, how are you really? But then I've had other people complain to me. They call it, oh, not the W, how are you? They call it the double how are you, which they find annoying. I mean, I'm just very direct with people. So what's going on? How's your inner life? Are you doing well? I mean, I'm just very, to me, I can talk about it as casually as I talk about the weather. So it's not hard. And that's what I would do. I would say just ask directly, and don't make a big deal out of it. Like, you can just dive into conversation about heavy stuff with with an upbeat attitude. That's what I do. I don't know. It's not the only way, and it maybe doesn't work with everybody, but it works for me.
Bill Burnett, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us. We're out of time. Folks, you've been listening to Real Talk on The Voice of Vashon. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with you every Tuesday, just around lunchtime in the Pacific Northwest. And Bill, I want to say, have a lovely day.
Thank you so much for having me on. You too.
Thanks for listening, folks.